You need to protect yourself. With crime as widespread as it is today, you need to protect yourself physically. So you lock your car doors when you're in your car, and even your house doors at night. Ladies buy pepper spray or they carry a cell phone. Some even take judo lessons. And there are a few who carry a gun. Whatever it is you do, you need to protect yourself physically. You also need to protect yourself financially. So if you own a home, you buy homeowner's insurance. And when you buy a car, you automatically get car insurance. Some buy life insurance. In a similar fashion, you need to protect yourself spiritually. How do you do that? Will church attendance protect you from falling into sin? It might help if when you go, you learn and apply what you learn. It will definitely help. Or if when you go, you find fellowship and support, that will give you strength. Church attendance alone, however, will not protect you totally. People go to church and sin, and we all know that. Matter of fact, it's so common that being a hypocrite is proverbial. Will reading your Bible protect you? Again, it might help. But we've all read our Bibles and even prayed, and that very day did the very thing we decided that we wouldn't do. Well, what then is the answer? Well, in my opinion, it is complex, and we should beware of simplistic answers. At the same time, it seems to me that a large piece of the puzzle is in the book of Proverbs. May I invite your attention to Proverbs chapter 4, where we can discover how to protect ourselves spiritually. I'm going to begin reading with verse 20. Solomon says, "My son, give attention to my words, incline your ear to my sayings. Do not let them depart from your eyes. Keep them in the midst of your heart. For they are life to those who find them and health to all their flesh. Keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it spring the issues of life. Put away from you a deceitful mouth, and put perverse lips far from you. Let your eyes look straight ahead, and your eyelids look right before you. Ponder the path of your feet, and let your ways be established. Do not turn to the right or to the left. Remove your foot from evil." In this passage, Solomon, in essence, is telling his son how to protect himself spiritually. It can be divided into two parts. In the first part of the passage, Solomon is saying, in essence, absorb wisdom. And then, in the second half of the passage, he is telling his son to guard himself. So, let's look at the passage beginning with verse 20 and verse 21. Solomon says, "My son, give attention to my words, incline your ear to my sayings, do not let them depart from your eyes. Keep them in the midst of your heart." In other words, listen to, look at, and learn wisdom. The key word in these first two verses is perhaps the word heart. That Hebrew word means the inner man, the mind, the emotions, and the will. It can also refer to one's inclinations, resolutions, appetites, and passions. In essence, Solomon is saying to his son, absorb wisdom. Incline your ear to it. Give attention to it. Don't let your eye depart from it, so that it will be kept in the midst of your heart. Whatever way you learn it, through the eye gate or the ear gate, learn it. Absorb wisdom. Educators talk about learning styles. There are a number of different theories. One theory says that some students are audio learners, some are visual learners, and some are kinesthetic learners. There's no such thing as a good learning style or a bad learning style or right or wrong approach to learning. All have their particular way of learning new information. The important thing is to be aware of the nature of your learning style. To illustrate, think about the way in which you remember a phone number. Do you see it in your mind's eye, how the numbers look on the phone? Do you see the numbers on a piece of paper, picturing it exactly as you wrote them down? You might be a visual learner, if that's the way you do it. Or perhaps you hear the numbers in a way that someone recites them to you. In that case, you would be an auditory learner. If you let your fingers do the walking on the phone, that is, your fingers dial the number without looking at the phone, you may be a kinesthetic learner. That is a somewhat simplistic view of a very complex subject, but that's the way educators talk about learning styles. This way of looking at learning styles uses the different channels of perception, seeing, hearing, touching, moving, as its model. Another theory says that some learn visually, some learn verbally, and some learn by reflection. Solomon says, learn wisdom several ways. Notice all the ways he mentions in these opening verses. Give attention to my words, incline your ear to my saying, do not let them depart from your eyes, keep them in the midst of your heart. So he's talking about these different learning styles, the eye, the ear, reflection. But whatever you do, learn wisdom. That's his point. Absorb it. He then gives the reason for absorbing wisdom. He says in verse 22, for they are life to those who find them and health to all their flesh. He is saying you need to absorb wisdom because this is life to you. It's also health. So it's critical that you absorb wisdom. Lord Byron abandoned himself to the pursuit of pleasure. When he was 35 years old, he wrote, my days are in the yellow leaf. The flower and the fruits of love are gone. The worm, the canker, and the grief are mine alone. In contrast, Adam Clark, a godly man who wrote a commentary on the whole Bible, wrote when he was 84 years old, I have passed through the springtime of my life. I have withstood the heat of its summer. I've culled the fruit of its fall. I am even now enduring the rigors of its winter. But at no great distance do I see the approach of a new eternal springtime. Hallelujah. What a contrast. Someone who lived a foolish life and at 35 was spent, and someone who at 84 had lived a wise life and was looking forward to an eternal springtime. Solomon is saying to his son, absorb wisdom, for it's life to you and it's health to you. Absorb it. Then, in the latter part of the passage, he says to himself that we ought to guard ourselves. As we have all painfully discovered, learning is not enough. So Solomon continues with this second piece of advice. In order for wisdom to work and do the work of protecting us, we must apply it to our heart, mouth, eyes, and feet. This time, he admonishes us to look at ourselves, our heart, our mouth, our eyes, our feet. So let's take those four parts of us and talk about each of them and how those members of us can help us protect us. For example, in verse 23, he says, keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it springs the issues of life. The Hebrew word translated keep literally means to watch, to guard, to protect. It's from this verse that I have entitled this whole passage, Protect Yourself. Keep, guard, protect your heart with all diligence. The Hebrew word diligence is a word, another word actually, which means guard or watch. The phrase the issues of life means the source of life. The concept of the heart, then, includes the mind, the emotions, the will, the whole inner being, and it has been called the workshop of the individual. The heart, the inner self, determines the direction one takes. There may be outside influences, but the heart determines the direction. And so that's why he says, with all diligence, keep, guard, protect the heart, for out of it springs the issues of life. Or as one commentator has said, a wound here is instant death. Take care, first and foremost, of your innermost being, your mind, your emotions, your will, your heart. Once there was a group of soldiers that was shooting at some targets for a prize. They prepared their rifles with great enthusiasm. One young man showed up with a sparkling clean weapon. He positioned himself, and with a steady hand and a clean eye, he pulled the trigger. But his bullet swerved to one side and missed the target entirely. He later discovered that there was a little rust on the inside of his gun barrel. For days he had polished the outside, but he had failed to clean the inside of his rifle. Solomon is saying to his son, don't make that mistake. Protect yourself and start with the heart. Guard and keep it, for out of it come the issues of life. Next, Solomon turns to the mouth. In verse 24, he says, put away from you a deceitful mouth and put perverse lips far from you. The word rendered deceitful means twisted, perverted, crooked. And the one translated perverse means devious, crooked, crafty, cunning. In other words, put away from you a deceitful, twisted, perverted, crooked, cunning mouth. In talking about spiritual growth in the book of Colossians, the Apostle Paul in chapter 3 made a major point about lying. He set that sin apart, indicating that it is particularly important to put it away if you are to grow spiritually. Matter of fact, when I was going through Colossians once, preaching through it, that little point struck me, that above all the other sins in that passage, Paul uses that as the climax and says, be sure to put that one away. But we all do it, don't we? Sometimes we out and out lie, and sometimes we shave the truth, and sometimes we just deceive. And that hinders our spiritual growth. Have you heard about a bar named The Office? The owners named it so that their customers could say to their wives, I'm at the office, when actually they were at a bar. When people begin to practice deceitful speech, they are opening themselves up to danger and damage. To protect yourself, put away a deceitful mouth. Next, Solomon turns his attention to the eyes. He says in verse 25 of Proverbs chapter 4, let your eyes look straight ahead, and your eyelids look right before you. The point is to have a straightforward, unsevering directness toward a fixed goal. May I repeat that? What Solomon means in these words is that we ought to have a straightforward, unswavering fix on a goal. Keep your eye on the goal. That's the point. Don't let anything you see distract you from moving toward your objective. Philippians chapter 3, the Apostle Paul said, "This one thing I do." That's the idea. Solomon is using the eye as the external organ, but the point is a deeply spiritual one. Keep your eye on the goal. The Bible is full of people who did not keep their eye on the goal. It begins with Eve, who saw the fruit, that it looked nice. Lot's wife turned back and looked at Sodom, became a pillar of salt. Achan got in trouble in the book of Joshua because of his eyes. And perhaps the classic illustration in all of the Bible is David, who saw Bathsheba and fell into sin. So with the eyes, we get distracted, whereas with the eye, we should look straight ahead and have them fixed on a spiritual goal. And in Philippians chapter 3, Paul said, "This one thing I do, I press toward the mark for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus." So, one practical way to say this is protect yourself. Keep your eye on the goal. Finally, Solomon turns to the feet. In the last two verses of chapter 4 of Proverbs, he says, "Ponder the path of your feet, and let your ways be established. Do not turn to the right or to the left. Remove your foot from evil." Let's look at this passage carefully. Ponder means to weigh. It can also mean to make level or smooth, and some even translate this level or make smooth, but that translation doesn't exactly fit other occurrences of the word in the Old Testament. The idea is really to weigh. The idea is to weigh what's going on carefully, to think it through, to reflect on it. What he's doing is he's cautioning against getting sidetracked. The writer to the Hebrews in the New Testament speaks of the sin that so easily ensnares us. If we are to protect ourselves spiritually, we must know our weaknesses and ponder our path accordingly. So, interesting. Solomon says, ponder your path. Weigh what you're doing. Think about it. Reflect on it. A convict was once asked by a prison chaplain how he got into trouble. And the convict said, "All of my troubles were the result of going into a bar. Every time I entered a bar, I got into a fight and ended up in jail." And the chaplain asked, "What do you mean, every time?" The prisoner didn't get the point. So the chaplain said, "I can understand why you might visit a tavern once or twice after getting into trouble. I don't understand why you kept going. Did someone force you to go into the bar?" The prisoner said, "No, I went under my own power." And all of a sudden, the light dawned on him. Perhaps that's an illustration of what Solomon is getting at. Ponder the path of your feet. If every time you get into that situation, X, Y, and Z happens, then think about that. Maybe you shouldn't get into that situation. Several artists were asked to illustrate their concept of temptation. One depicted man's attempt to achieve fame and fortune at any cost. Another pictured man's struggle against the desire of the flesh. The prize-winning canvas portrayed a pastoral scene in which a man was walking along a quiet country lane among shaded trees and lovely wild flowers. In the distance, the road was divided into two roads, one leading to the right and the other leading to the left. That's the picture that one the prize for being the best to illustrate the concept of temptation. The point being, the temptation is subtle. It appears often as an innocent fork in the road. So when you come to those moments, Solomon says, ponder your path. Don't go down the wrong path. So, this brief little passage could be summarized by saying, in order to protect yourself, absorb wisdom and guard your heart to make sure that you follow it. Now, I am aware, as I have pointed out, that he talks about the mouth, the eye, and the feet, but it seems to me the heart of the matter, if you'll let me put it that way, is the heart. That we need to protect ourselves by absorbing wisdom and then guarding our heart to make sure that we follow it. The passage mentions not speaking deceitfully, keeping your eye on the goal, and carefully considering all you do. But again, the issue is the heart. The ultimate issue is not the mouth or the eyes or the feet. The issue is the heart. Jesus said it, and he said it clearly and plainly. Quote, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. It's in Matthew chapter 12. The issue is the heart. Keeping your eye on the goal is not a function of the eye, it is a function of the brain. Notice Solomon says, ponder what you do. The issue is the heart, being defined as what you think and what you feel and what you choose. The issue is not your circumstances, it's your heart. It's not others, it's you. It's your heart. Someone has said that if you put a piece of wax, a piece of meat, some sand, some clay, and some shavings in a fire, the wax would melt, the meat would fry, the sand would dry up, and the clay would harden, and the shavings would burst into flame. The issue is not the external circumstances, the fire. Each of these materials were under the influence of the identical circumstances, the fire. But they responded differently according to their inner composition. Under the same set of circumstances, some melted like wax, and others hardened like clay. So the issue is not the circumstances. The issue is the heart. You want to protect yourself spiritually? Guard the heart. Keep it warm toward the Lord and toward others that you love, like your spouse. Prior to the development of the thermostatically controlled heater, greenhouses were equipped with a frost bell, an electronic device connected to a thermostat that would warm the warmer when the mercury fell to its danger point. When the bell went off, the farmer would know to light the fire to save his crop. Believers need a frost bell to determine when their heart is getting cold, so they can draw close to the Lord and warm it up, because out of it are the issues of life. Bottom line, you want to protect yourself spiritually? Guard your heart.